Yes, folks, that is University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus, where another pro-Palestine protest has been suppressed by police arresting people. We'll be talking a lot about this today. I'm with David Griscom, and later we'll be joined by Michelle and Electra of Vote Uncommitted New Jersey. But David, good to be with you today.
Good to be with you too, brother.
Nick Estes, that was a tweet for folks to reading. I'll put this up on screen here. More than 1,000 students, faculty, and staff walked out of class today at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus in solidarity with the 9 arrested this morning. 7 were students for trying to set up an anti-genocide encampment. I'll scroll down here. Sean Lim, MN, is another person people should follow in the Minnesota area. I believe he worked with Robin Walmsley as well. But now at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, an emergency protest has mobilized upward of 1,000 University of Minnesota students and staff now gathered outside Memorial Union. You see them there. These protests are, as people know, not just at Columbia now, they're across the country. My alma mater, NYU, is constructing literal barricades or a wall to keep people out of private space who are just trying to protest a genocide and arresting professors alongside students. It's a very grim time for speech and for state violence and the oppression and suppression of people who oppose it.
Yeah, but at the same time, tremendously inspiring to see, these students taking the fight literally, yep. To the institutions around them. And, as we know here, the fight is serious. Also wanted to, remind folks of the horrors that are happening in Germany, where, the crackdown on freedom of speech and expression was just unbelievable. As I'm sure people have seen, famously, somebody like Yanis Varoufakis, not being allowed to hell, not only not being allowed to enter the country to speak, the German government trying to make it illegal for people to distribute videos of Yanis Varoufakis speaking, spitting on the face of any kind of concept of Europe, let alone just basic human decency. So this is just, this is a kind of fight that I think just directly puts us in conflict with the established order, in a lot of places, from the university system to, organizations like the European Union, and hopefully it's a clarifying moment for a lot of the people who are engaging with these things, to sort of recognize, man, there's a lot of problems with the world that we live in, and it seems that there's the same group of people who are lining up in defense of these institutions that, in the case of, supporting the genocide in Gaza, are literally killing folks, to the cases of what we're seeing at the university systems or in Germany, they're trying to stifle freedom of speech and democracy all across the globe.
Yeah, and let's just foreground actually what's going on in Gaza. The United Nations Human Rights Office of the High Commissioner, quote, "After 6 months of military assault, more than 5,479 students, 261 teachers, and 95 university professors have been killed in Gaza. And over 7,819 students and 756 teachers have been injured, with numbers growing each day." And so that is what this sort of focus by CNN on marginal stuff at protests is obscuring. And also just point out University of Minnesota here. Thank you so much, everybody. Showed up. These are the 9 folks who got arrested. They're out. The man now dropped the charges for those folks. And I also want to point this out. Like, it's weird seeing the accusations from Israel supporters. Like, well, what do you think about, America did this too? I don't see you leaving America. Well, I think you have to have a relationship to the history of America here that looks a little bit something like this. So just to put, again, foreground what's actually happening in Gaza first. Satellite imagery from Maxar shows the growth of tents. This is in a preparation for further invasion of Rafah. And so you see these tents being set up. And I would just point people, particularly speaking, because we opened with the Minnesota protests here. This is the history of the Minneapolis area, the Twin Cities. You fly over this area if you fly into the Twin Cities, into the airport there. That is a concentration camp for North Dakota Indians set up by the Minnesota government in 1862. And this is just history repeating itself. And so good on those students for learning from history. And how dare this system try to suppress people for being righteous in that way.
Absolutely. Well,
we'll have plenty of time to get more into that with our representatives from New Jersey Uncommitted, but maybe let's address the labor front for a little
bit. So we're going to talk in depth about the non-committed campaign, and I think it's something that's very exciting. We'll talk about that in depth in just a minute. But before we get there, we're talking about difficult things, and at moments like this, I'm reminded of the great William Morris quote: "The cause of labor is the hope of the world." And in a moment like this, the fight for working class power, for workers' democracy, really is the hope to break through all these things. As we were talking about in the last segment, talking about Gaza, talking about the attack on freedom of speech, talking about the just direct attack on democracy. The only force that is going to be able to challenge the interests that are fighting against all of us is going to be a united working class. So in America, as we are seeing a working class movement become more and more militant, more and more organized, more and more willing to fight and to take risks, that should give you tremendous amounts of hope. And I mean, we got it, baby, right here. I mean, what just happened over the weekend with the UAW winning in Chattanooga, Tennessee, is just so massive. And I know, I think it's just, you cannot overstate how important this victory is. How difficult it has been. I mean, this has been, a plant that have tried to unionize time and time again. And one of the things that we say on this program all the time is, after Sean Fain and the leadership of the UAW took on the Big Three in this historic strike, I wouldn't have been offended if I saw a photograph of Sean Fain drinking a margarita in Cozumel or something like that, going on vacation, but that's not what ended up happening. What ended up happening was a direct commitment to taking this victory with those strikes into the fight of organizing and growing working class power. And for a long time in the American labor movement, and understandably, one of the arguments that you would get from conservatives within the labor movement would be, we have to sort of take concessions. We have to take concessions at the bargaining table because we are at risk of seeing our plants go down south. And if they go down south, we lose everything, right? And the South in this country, not just in the auto industry, but in industry after industry, think about organizations like Boeing, right? The South has been used as a kind of internal low-wage market to try to drive down unionization rates and wages across the rest of the country. It's been extremely difficult to organize labor in the South, both today and throughout history, because of the entrenched power of capital within the government. We saw that very clearly here, where you had a bunch of Southern governors coming together and saying, a unionized future is a threat to our values. We'll get into that in just a second. But instead of just taking that kind of excuse and saying, oh, it's difficult, we sort of have to consider this, taking this fight directly on, it's like, well, if the South is a difficult, is a kind of threat because they can just move plants down there, move jobs down there, and undermine our power, well, let's unionize the South. And I think that kind of confidence and that spirit is something that's so inspiring. We saw this massive victory in Chattanooga. And we'll talk in just a second about, some of these next step things. But I just think that it's tremendously important to, one, be able to take this moment and to celebrate it, and also recognize that this is the kind of enthusiasm that is able to snowball political movements, right? We talk a lot on this program about, one of the difficult things for our movement is that a lot of people are understandably kind of depressed about politics, depressed about organizing, depressed about the future. And, it can be hard to go up to somebody and say, hey, we got all these great ideas to change things. People say, hey, it's a nice idea, but I just don't believe it's possible. Well, what we're seeing right now with Sean Fain, what we're seeing right now with this militant group in the UAW, what we're seeing right now with everyday working class people coming together and building up their power is the kind of real example of what is possible. And it's something that should inspire you in your work. It should inspire you in your daily life. And it's just a huge victory all around, this victory in Chattanooga.
Yeah, I can't remember who exactly said it. Maybe one of our Valley Labor Report buddies, but that this is, you know, people look at the lack of traction that maybe, say, electoral politics is offering at the moment and are turning into, well, like, how do I empower myself more directly? And I mean, it's so inspiring. And this is just another case where it's like, you know, all this talk about alienation that like magazines and like in the from the coast try to talk about, it's like, what's going on with just people in the middle of the country? And why, well, they're being, you know, driven by bosses away from their families. And so when Sean Fain gets up there and talks about, you know, we want you to spend more time with your families and friends. And in addition to being compensated more for the what you do at work, like, that is the solution. And it is a solution that is that our media is not designed to convey to people. So to see people pick it up regardless is just, you know, I mean, thank God. Like, because like you said, there's not a whole lot to be hopeful about. And, you know, Prem Thakur, The Intercept, put in a statement from 28 unions supporting the student protesters. Like, this is a very positive development we're seeing.
100%. And let's play this interview here, the snippet of this interview for More Perfect Union. I'm going to put the link to this whole 22-minute interview up in the chat. It's very much worth your time, this conversation with Sean Fain. But let's just play this clip here.
We saw a united front of six governors come out and say that a union win here would go against the very way of life in the South. What does it mean to have the first win after the big three happen in the South?
I can't even really put it into words what it means. It's going to take time for this to sink in, I think. But, and they're right. It is going to disturb their way of life. And when I say there, I mean the billionaire class and the corporate class, because all those six governors that wrote that letter, they're puppets for the corporate class. They don't give a damn about the people they represent. You know, how can you stand there as an elected representative and tell workers you deserve less? We support an economy that abuses you so that these corporations can make more and more money on top of the already massive profits that your labor has created. I'm sorry, but I don't care what your party is. If that's what you believe, you don't give a damn about the people you represent. And at some point, those workers are going to realize that. And that's what needs to happen. But it's a shame that I think it's a sign and it's a testament to how out of control, the wealth gap has went in this country and in this world. Three American families have as much wealth as the bottom 50% of Americans. I mean, think about that. Three families have as much wealth as half of Americans. That is criminal. And if that's what these governors support is a lifestyle like that, shame on them.
Yeah, it's a great interview. Great interview there by a More Perfect Union, and you know, just excellent from Sean Fain.
Yeah, you know, those stats of like how unequal society is. It's, you know, the Piketty moment maybe in 2008 was sort of the height of that coming to surface. And it's interesting how that has aged, because at first it's like, oh, this is an interesting trivia. And it should be met as, this is a crime. Mm-hmm. This is a problem to solve and urgently to address, and not something to like hope gets better. Not to keep bringing up Gaza, but Colombia lost a donor recently. Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, because they revoked the card of that Shai Davidi business guy who's been going around calling students terrorists. And I mean, it just goes to show, like, this hyper inequality, it explains a lot with regards to, like, you know, whose priorities get mentioned. And what action do governments and stuff take, or administrations take? And the way to fight it is this. It is through these sorts of organizations.
I mean, look, that class, they are threatened by your freedom and they want to control your life. They want to take the things that you create. They want to take the money that you create while you're at work. They want to limit your ability to have a say in a large part of your life, which is what the time that you spend at work. They want to control your politicians and they want to control your democracy. And a lot of politicians of both the Democratic and the Republican Party are more than happy to line up to the highest bidder. And I think recognizing that this class, its existence in its current form is just incompatible with living in a free society. I think this is something that more and more people are waking up to every day. And what is necessary is to build these kind of real independent organizations. The UAW is not beholden, to a political party like the Democratic Party or to like a certain kind of establishment, right? They can play with those folks and maybe try to get things from them. But at the end of the day, they're there for everyday folks. And building up that power is really how you're going to get things to change. And the exciting thing is, like, first of all, one quick thing. That election was a landslide. It was not even close. Yeah. And I think that we just can't, forget to mention that. That was massive. Again, this is a facility that there have been multiple votes before that were unsuccessful. So getting that victory at that kind of margin is massive. That means not only, do you have what is necessary to create the union, you have a lot of people who were fired up to be in this institution, in this organization. Absolutely massive. Two, it's not the only one. It's not the only one that's going on right now. And we already got a next up, and that's the Mercedes plant, which is also very exciting because that has been organized via rank and file folks in the Mercedes plant who said, we want a union. We're going to fight to create one. The UAW put out a really great video on this, a great interview here, and that I want to highlight. Because Mercedes is up next. I think it's May 13th. May 17th is when the vote is. So a couple weeks in the near future. And man, I'm saying to Matt, it's like, man, if we could get a real domino, if we could get a real blitz of the South and really tackle that ruling class that has been harming so many Southern workers and workers all across the country, it would be massive, I think, for what the next few years look like politically in the labor field for this country. But let's play this for a second, because I think this is a really powerful video. And something I'll just say as we put this up, this is from the UAW. It's something that's missing in so much of the media in this country. There's a lot of talks about like authenticity and all this kind of stuff. How often do you get to hear people talk about what their life is like, the daily life of working people, the vast majority of us, and what that experience is like? There's a lot of attention paid to a certain class of people. There's certain kinds of lives that are sort of reflected to us on television and things like that. It's really powerful when you get to hear what people's everyday experiences, even when it's difficult, because it gives us the kind of raw material that's necessary to change it. But let's play this here.
Beyond fed up. We need this union. We don't want it. We need it. Because I know just about now, my rent is as much as my check. It makes me more than hangry. That I come in every day and I get dog tired just to be able to have a place to live. An incident occurred where the group leader didn't take any time out to try to investigate the situation. They more just took the team leader's side and punished the team member. They have their favorites, whatever they say goes, and there's no questions asked about it. We should be treated all as equal. I was raised in a sense my mother told me you should give the same respect to the janitor as you would the president. Everyone is deserving of it. If you want your value, then you have to fight for it.
That's exactly right. And I hope that, the UAW is successful in all of these campaigns. There's a spot up the road for me owned by a guy named Elon Musk that I'd really love to see a UAW victory there as well.
Yeah. I mean, this is it. And it's funny, like there's like a book called like Man's Search for Meaning and like all these different things. It's like, this is it. Just like overthrowing kings in a previous era would have been what your life's meaning would be on sort of a broad scale. This is what life's meaning is now. It is all these, the investors and the executives that work for them, they don't just get to boss you around and discard you like nothing as you build like literal citadels of production for them, so they can like make luxury cars. Like, we take control over it. Gene, hard to disagree. There's no way I respect the president as much as a janitor. I mean, no, that's a good Republican sentiment there, Gene.
Well, the other way around, but no, totally. I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on that's very exciting. I think we lost Matt here. But I think that, like, I'll just say this in close, and then we're going to go to our interview where we're going to talk about Gaza and this push for a non-committed vote in the primary in New Jersey, and I believe also in Maryland. Two things that have been endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of America, which is, you know, I think something that is really important, I think, for this movement. I mean, one thing that I've been saying for years is that we absolutely must be making sure that this movement, that the Democratic Socialist movement in this country, makes it explicitly clear that they do not stand with the leadership of the Democratic Party. I think that line gets blurred way too much. And participating in movements like this that are saying, hey, we're going to fight for democracy. We're going to fight for people's rights to be able to choose and for people to be able to say no to somebody like Joe Biden, who wants to support the mass slaughter of Palestinians, something that has been recognized as a genocide all across the globe. I think that that's something that is worth fighting for and really damn important. So we're going to go over this conversation here that we had with two organizers with the Uncommitted campaign in New Jersey. And then Matt and I will be back to talk about one more story and then go into the post game, which you can get access to at patreon.com/leftreckoning. We got some Patrick Bet David and a few other things there. You won't want to miss it. But without further ado, let's go to our conversation here. Welcome back, Left Reckoners. David here, joined as always by Matt Leck. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, David.
I'm happy that you're here because we're going to be talking about something very important. I mean, as anyone who's been watching this program since October 7th, before that, we've been talking about the role that Joe Biden and the Democratic Party have played in some major atrocities abroad. None more important at this moment than what has been going on in Gaza. And there's a lot of questions about whether or not this is intentional from Joe Biden, whether or not he doesn't care, or whether or not he is so ideologically committed to certain kind of geopolitical goals that he's willing to take whatever consequences come with his action or inaction regarding Gaza. To talk a little bit more about that, we are very lucky to be joined by two academics, activists who are pushing for a non-committed campaign in the state of New Jersey. Electra and Michelle, really happy to have both of y'all on. Maybe to get us started, if y'all could just introduce yourself to the audience here, and then we could talk a little bit more about the non-committed campaign.
Absolutely. Michelle, would you like to go first?
Sure, I'd love to. My name is Michelle. I am a lifelong Jersey girl, and I'm working on the New Jersey Uncommitted campaign. I'm one of the 8 members of the steering committee. And we're trying to get New Jersey to go to the polls on June 4th and vote uncommitted as a protest vote for the Democratic primary to show that we're not supporting how Joe Biden is carrying out foreign policy.
And hello, I'm Electra. I am an immigrant to the United States. I came about 12 years ago. I'm a professor of Middle East Studies and Mediterranean Studies at NJIT in Rutgers, New York, here in New Jersey. And I have joined the campaign out of despair and grateful for the opportunity to do something actually about this whole devastating situation. And we can talk more about our goals and what we are trying to achieve, but on an individual level, we're all looking to do something in order to express what we believe is a majority sentiment among Democratic voters for sure, but Americans in general, I dare say, our profound dissatisfaction with our political regimes.
Yeah, I mean, on that, so obviously the campaign and the focus is to have a large number of people vote uncommitted, non-committed, to send a message. And I'm just wondering, you know, briefly, just to get us started, if y'all could tell us what that message is, you know, let's say that we get what we want, high numbers, what is that message? What would you like that? How would you like that to be interpreted by Biden, by the Democratic Party, and also by Americans?
That the American people are dissatisfied with the Biden administration, that either they change course or we're not supporting them anymore. This is so popular among people that I think there was a Gallup poll last week that this is just Americans, not even Democrats, it's less than 36% of the country supports Israel's military actions. And an extension of that is the United States, because we're the ones funding it.
And if I may build on that, this is, I hope we would both agree, I think we would both agree that it's important to emphasize the dynamic character of that campaign, right? Everything started about a month ago. We were just a watch-up group at the beginning. People were trying to come together and were all overwhelmed with the atrocities that we're witnessing on a daily basis and the complete inability to do something. So it started as a conversation and watch-up, and like we were trying to coordinate with protests and different actions, and then Michigan happened. And somebody came up with that idea that, you know, like everything is great, we continue to protest and all that, but people continue to get slaughtered. And not only the message is not getting received apparently, but our administration continues to send money to Israel, which is truly offensive to the American people. So Michigan happened, and very spontaneously we decided to start a similar campaign in New Jersey. And in less than 2 weeks, in 1 week, we managed to put uncommitted on the ballot because it wasn't on the ballot before in New Jersey. So we collected the signatures, and Michelle is way more central than me in like working daily to make that happen. So we have been canvassing, trying to like just follow the bureaucratic process and put us on the ballot and just deliver a message which wasn't a partisan message, and it's not a partisan message, and it's dynamic, right? So it's just an invitation for people to participate actively in the political process. And I feel like the message is changing as well, because as far as I am concerned, at least a month ago, I was way more moderate about my approach to everything. Is Joe Biden going to get the message at some point and do the right thing? At this point, I think we are beyond any type of conversation, as far as I am concerned, as to whether this administration is salvageable or worth saving in any way. It's just a very clear statement as to the fact that we care about our democracy, naive as it might sound, and that it is not really their little business to abuse and just throw out the window. It's not their party, it's not their democracy, it's not their country. It is really outrageous what's happening. So
yeah, I'm curious to hear either.
Oh, no, I'm ahead. Sorry. I'm not sure whether we answered the question as to what's the message. For now, it's an act of protest more than anything else, but it's a dynamic message. And we hope as we keep talking with more people, and it becomes apparent, abundantly clear that the majority of people seem to agree with us rather than the administration, maybe it could become the beginning of something bigger than just a protest, a loud protest.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear you guys speak about, you know, I think the uncommitted movement has kind of tried to address several contradictions, which is one, to the extent there are Congress people calling for a ceasefire, they're Democrats. but also the current president administration that's helping the genocide and ethnic cleansing is a Democratic administration. So I'm just curious to see you guys talk about, you know, how you're trying to, because I do think, like, on the evil or dumb sort of like question, there are a lot of Democrats that would probably rather people that don't want Israel to continue ethnic cleansing to just sit out of politics entirely. But also, like, they have a pretty strong control of the party. So just talk about how this movement is trying to address those contradictions.
I think that, like, I feel like the biggest contradiction is really that it's in the two-party system itself that, you know, that there's every, like, nobody, why is it that we have two candidates for president and nobody likes them, and then this is what, and there's nothing that anybody can do about them? I think that this is a big step in the rejection from Democrats towards saying, this isn't working, this doesn't make any sense, and we are all deeply unhappy with our political representation in this country.
And also, at some point, we really need to start talking about laws and the legality of it all, because very real laws are violated, American laws, international laws. I mean, they don't even try to justify what's happening. The only attempt is denying the reality on the ground, trying to convince us somehow that what we all witness, and it's recorded on social media, and like there is no question as to the record, is not happening. Kirby had the audacity again to stand in front of the nation the other day and to say that we will continue to send money to Israel despite the fact that it's against the law, right? Because according to American laws, even if there is an allegation of human rights violations abroad, we are not supposed to be shipping weapons, giving money, and like supporting foreign governments in any way. If there is an allegation of human rights violations, and we are talking about a recorded genocide, the first in human history that is recorded live on social media, with the ICJ investigating, like the international community being completely transformed by the intensity of that all, and they have the audacity to stand right in front of us and to say that they haven't noticed anything. 40,000 people slaughtered, 2 million people starved to death, 2 million people displaced, as they're preparing now to attack Rafah as well, with the pictures of like cruelty, making all of us, I mean, mentally sick, really, as we're witnessing this whole thing. But they have the audacity to stand in front of the nation and say that we haven't seen anything. There is no proof of any human rights violations, and thereby will continue to support Israel. And this is bipartisan. I want to highlight that, like the Mike Johnson betrayal or whatever you want to call it, because regardless of where we are, what motivates us, right, ideologically speaking, I think there is an overall consensus in this country that Americans do not want war. We do not want to participate in any conflicts, and that across the conservative voting base and the Democratic voting base, and most important, we do not want to continue sending billions to finance these conflicts. As like case in point, $95 billion that was just presented to the House by Mike Johnson, who was appointed, by the way, to do the exact opposite. So there is outrage among Republicans. I mean, we may disagree on many things, but we seem to agree on that. There is outrage among Democrats. And the question emerges, whose country is this country? Whose democracy is this democracy? Whose money is the money that is shipped to these endless wars, right, by the billions, to murdered babies and commit atrocities from which humanity will struggle to recover? It's really difficult to accept that this is happening and that the people who allegedly represent us don't even try to entertain the idea that their voters deserve an answer other than just lying and denying the truth. It's shocking to me.
I feel like there's a lot of things that are happening right now that are, you know, all, like a bunch of things are coming to a head at once. I think that social media is a huge part of it. I think that also like the country, the cost of living going up, and being ridiculous. And I think there's like very much a feeling happening right now that, oh, these wars, this is why we can't have nice things in the United States. Like, this is why we can't have universal healthcare. This is why we can't have like daycare programs the way that a lot of Europe does. And I think people are really angry about it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, I think this really gets to the heart of like a lot of fundamental problems in American politics where, look, I mean, this has been my whole life, for example, here in Texas, where like, you know, the Democratic Party here has been, you know, has lost for 30 years plus, right? But you know what they always do every time in this election time? They sort of point toward the Republican Party. They're like, hey, those are the really bad guys. Those are the really bad guys. You know, instead of, you know, maybe running on an option, something that might be mobilizing or motivating to folks, you know, to try to, and we're seeing this now happen on the national stage. In the past few presidential cycles, at least, it's been a lot of like, the Republicans are really bad. Donald Trump is really bad. And hell yeah, they are. Absolutely. But, you know, that has also allowed the Democratic Party to get to a point where Joe Biden is literally enabling a genocide. And we'll go out there and, you know, and basically the response from a lot of people who are loyal to the Democratic Party is like, well, if you start criticizing this party, you are only enabling the right. And if effectively what that ends up doing is creating a foreign policy. And as you were just saying, Michelle, in my opinion, like a national policy that doesn't really reflect the views of everyday Americans at all.
I completely agree with you. And I feel like with a lot of people are tired of being like the left, especially they're being tired of being held hostage by the Democrats because the Democrats are constantly leaning towards the center to try and make the center happy because they feel confident that the left is never going to abandon them. Because there is no like formal party that's further left. And so I think that we have to start showing the Democratic Party that we are willing to say, if you do not change, I am not going to stick around here. Because this doesn't represent me.
Yeah, and I just want to say, you mentioned the anti-war sentiment. That's so true. Like, every candidate is kind of, like, Biden was anti-forever war, but Trump, very anti-Ukraine funding. Also, RFK, who are both strong supporters of Israel, despite that. But there's still a sentiment of, you know, Americans are, you know, Trump's called the Iraq War a big, fat mistake. So, like, and yeah, nobody, there is really no... critical of Israel. I mean, Cornel West, appreciate him going to the Columbia protests, but as far as like the big three right now, they're all basically various degrees supporters of Israel, what Israel's doing right now.
And perhaps this is why they are the big three, right? Whereas Cornel West and all of the other options that we have is a protest vote right now. It will be my vote of choice if this continues the way it goes, but we all know that it's just a protest. And you're very right. Trump was elected actually to stop these wars and to promote this idea of isolationism that agrees with his base. Biden was elected by us, and I feel like we were coerced to vote for him. I did, against my better judgment last time around. To end the forever wars and all that. Quite frankly, we have been betrayed, all of us across the board. And it's a very sinister game because at the end of the day, we may have more in common, even with the Republican base, right, than we appreciate. But we're all stuck in this discussion about, you know, the cultural wars or reproductive rights that very conveniently the Biden administration let reach the point of like the horrific legislations that we see issued right now. And they're very happy that this is happening because, as you said, that's their only argument. Look what the Republicans are doing. this is not a campaign. This is not a political argument. And I feel that most Americans would agree that they want healthcare and education. I'm not sure Republicans at this point would be against healthcare and education, access to healthcare and education. I think that even migration is again weaponized by both of them. And we have Biden going to the border and asking Trump to work with him because at the end of the day, they want the same thing. Like on all the issues, I think that we, the voters, we may have way more in common among ourselves, but it is abundantly clear that we're not represented by either of these two parties or candidates such as Kennedy, who was presenting himself as a rebel and an anti-war candidate, only to become, you know, the most...
To go for like, I'm sorry, it's almost like the cliche in American politics is just to be steadfast in support of Israel. I mean,
well, bigger support than the other two, right? As if that's ridiculous. And quite frankly, to me, it shows, among other things, back to the debate about like, are they just stupid or is it just, you know, some conspiracy going around, that it shows really bad political instincts. Are you paying attention to the country? Because quite frankly, somebody with some basic understanding of what's happening could really benefit on a personal level as well by doing the surprising thing of giving the voters something they're asking for instead of completely disregarding them.
Yeah, Charlie, go ahead, Michelle.
Do you know how bad you have to have screwed up that you have motivated Americans to vote based on foreign policy? That doesn't happen. We don't do that.
Yeah, and even like Republicans, I've seen it, that while a majority might still sort of support weapons transfers to Israel, it's not, you know, 70-30 like it used to be. It's closer to 60-40, 55-45. And yeah, I agree, like, it'd be nice to see a new crop of anti-Zionist politicians come in and maybe show a little bit more backbone on this stuff too, in addition to like what the message we want to send in a presidential election.
And a big part of that Republican group is like just Zionist evangelicals, which is a whole like separate category in and of itself, because we have some like different levels of lunacy there, that, you know, you want to trigger the second coming and all of that, like actively, that's the active message. But among Republicans who have been convinced that somehow the Democratic establishment is to be blamed for everything by Trump, although Trump didn't do much to change, right, the main issues that Republicans care about. I don't think they care about Israel either way. And most people, when they realize what's happening, right, when they do understand that indeed there are 40,000 people that are slaughtered, most of them women and children, I really don't think that ordinary working class Americans draw satisfaction from the slaughter of babies in their cribs. I really struggle to accept that.
And honestly, they would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for social media. And now I don't think it's a coincidence that they're trying to ban TikTok all of a sudden. And that Instagram now has a feature where it automatically turns off political content on your feed unless you turn it back on. Like those don't sound like coincidences to me.
Well, I mean, I think that's very true. And, I think, you're seeing that kind of effort from, you know, also just like the financial interest behind, an organization like Instagram. It's like, hey, I don't want to have my ad for perfume served up next to a photograph of, you know, mass slaughter in Gaza. Right. So there is this kind of push, I think, to, you know, reduce the amount of one conversations about this. I mean, two, trying to intimidate folks. And I think one of the major sites of struggle in the U.S. at least has been, the university system. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that in the last few minutes with y'all, because, you know, I mean, Matt and I have been doing this for a while, and we've talked all about, we've had multiple, kind of bubbling up of, conversations about campus politics, right? Oh, have the universities become too woke? Are the universities anti-free speech? All this kind of stuff, right? And we don't have time to get into all of that right now, but I will say that, like, in my experience when I was an undergrad, you know, I was in organizations called Students for Justice in Palestine. And do you know what group was the one that always had a difficult time, you know, being able to make sure that our events were allowed to happen, that we weren't getting threatened by the university administration? It was, you know, Students for Justice in Palestine, not the other groups, right? And it's not something that's new, for example, like attacking people for speaking for Palestinian human rights and dignity and that kind of thing. But because of the sheer amount and the focus on it right now, I mean, we're seeing really brutal examples across the country when it comes to freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, and just like, you know, academic integrity in the first place. And I was just curious for both of y'all, you know, with your experience, you know, what y'all's thoughts are as to why, you know, the university has been such a site, and also, you know, what you're sort of looking at right now when you see these kind of crackdowns from university officials or outside figures even.
I think that there's been so much movement in the, like, even within just organizing for the Uncommitted campaign, so much of the support that we got immediately, so many of the groups that were immediately reaching out and saying, like, how can we help? What do you need from us? Have been, the Students for Justice in Palestine. I think that they see that, like, oh, these are groups of people that are, you know, they are ready to mobilize. They are ready to fight this. And I think that there is a fear of the influence that these students are able to have. And that's why they're coming down so hard on them. Because I think that if they didn't think that it would make a difference, then they would have just let it slide. The problem is that they are worried that it is going to make a difference and they don't want it to.
I fully agree with Michelle, and I feel that they didn't see that coming, right? Because we have unprecedented mobilizations almost everywhere. Universities are divesting. Here, Rutgers faculty and student voted by 75% to divest just last week. Like, we have the iconic mobilizations at Columbia unfolding as we speak. And I don't remember anything like that happening in the U.S., not only in our lifetime, but ever since the 60s, according to the historical record. So these are unprecedented developments. And we see, as Michelle said, the students rising up everywhere. And social media and, like, the new platforms that we have and the new types of literacy and education, right, which is challenging Ivy League walls and the academic barriers that we had up until recently. It's a new type of street literacy, if you like, thanks to social media and the very dynamic youth movements. So these are unprecedented developments, and I believe that on the end of the establishment, whether we're talking about the academic establishment or the political establishment and corporate media, they didn't see it coming and they don't know what to do about this. And when a system is in crisis and when a regime is shattered from within, they always respond with oppression and violence. This is a sign of weakness. It's not a sign of strength anyway, you look at it. So we are outraged and we're worried. We're worried because we see people getting fired, intimidated, silenced, but we're also encouraged because the wall is falling, right? This wall that as a metaphor of intimidation that they are trying to build is collapsing right in front of their very eyes. At Columbia, they arrested 100 students, and then 300 students were there the next day to continue the protest. And at some point today, the faculty was coming out in big numbers to support their students. And in many universities, we have all signed a pledge to support our students and to take their side and to protect them. And if they are going to arrest somebody, they should arrest all of us, really. So then when you're faced with the numbers, right, among students and faculty and people from all walks of life saying no to this campaign of gaslighting and intimidation, I don't see how it can be successful. So there is hope in there, entailed therein.
I feel like the students really hit on something with the, like, trying to get schools to divest.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's always going to, like, raise the hairs on the back of their necks when the students start coming for the money.
And also it points to the source of the problem, right? Because we are divesting from what exactly? From defense contractors that somehow are desperate to make a few more billions this week by slaughtering even more civilians. And then we're going to enter classrooms and auditoriums and teach our students international law and human rights, and which is what I do, among other things, right? And population movements and refugees and humanitarian relief and all that. We should be ashamed of ourselves. Like, that level of hypocrisy is really offensive.
I know. And I mean, it absolutely is. If y'all, I really appreciated speaking with both of y'all. Could y'all tell people where they could maybe find out more information about getting involved, both, I don't know if it's just New Jersey specific or people in other places, any other message that you have for our listeners?
Sure. So if you're in New Jersey, please follow us on all platforms. We're at Uncommitted NJ. We're also, if you're interested, take a look at our website, take a look at our pledge. If you are in New Jersey and you're going to vote uncommitted, please fill out the pledge so we can see where we have people voting and where we need to work a little harder to get the message out. And there are movements happening all over the place. You can look in your state. Like, not every state has the possibility to put uncommitted or uninstructed or whatever on the ballot, but Pennsylvania's coming up, Maryland's coming up. There are still, I think Kentucky is also coming up. There are these movements all over the country, and, you know, the organizers are working really hard. go show them some love.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely do. And I will just say that I think that this is exactly where people should be putting their effort in right now. I think it's critical for human rights globally, but also as an important part of our fight for democracy in this country. So appreciate both of y'all taking the time. Appreciate your work very much.
Thank you. Share the links as well directly. And as mm-hmm. Michelle said, it's important to highlight one more time that this is not a partisan movement, right? We're not promoting a candidate. We don't really know what the alternative could be at this point. But we do know that we are in desperate need of an alternative. So we want to deliver that message that withdrawing is not the answer, because people are devastated, people are frustrated, mm-hmm. people are overwhelmed, but withdrawing from the political process is not the answer. We need to become more engaged. We need to start talking to one another, and we have to reclaim our democracy as Americans. Like, it's a cliche and somewhat naive perhaps, but allegedly, we are a republic, and we, the people, are the sovereigns of this land. Allegedly, maybe it's about time to reclaim that. And it is an existential point. So we don't have a clear partisan goal, and that's our strength and weakness, maybe. A weakness because it's a protest, and a strength because there's so many things we can all do if we come together and we stop withdrawing because we are too intimidated or devastated with everything that's happening.
Yeah, folks, and we have another chunk of that interview coming up in just a little bit for you.
Yeah, in the post game. We'll have more on that and talking about the state of American democracy, the problem of Joe Biden in the postgame, patreon.com/leftreckon, and get access to that. This is something that I think is just exceptionally important for people to be supporting, as we said in that video, because at this point, I mean, there really are limited options. I mean, you look at somebody like Marianne Williamson, who effectively, you know, is backing a lot of the stuff going on in Gaza has not been somebody who's been strong on this question. You know, it's just this is the place in the, to be sort of, you know, uncommitted is the way to sort of make sure that there's a tally versus just a kind of resignation from a lot of folks.
And yeah, I mean, getting out there and hooking up with like these groups right now is just really important for the fight we need, just, you know, broadly speaking. And you know, it's very inspiring and scary. Like I also think like, you know, it's, I appreciate, you know, getting people on that are closer to this sort of organizing when they say things like, while it's scary, there's also cause for optimism, the reception we're receiving, because, you know, it's really difficult thing. There's plenty of things that are really dark on the horizon and, or just presently being hit with, and the type of lashing out that we're seeing from the press, from the administrators, is just, but I do think like a sign of weakness, and people can organize for hopefully, to try to beat this, you know, and yeah, I really, am inspired by all the people who have at least tried something here.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, on that, before we go to the post game, there's just one more story I wanted to cover here, which is something local. As people who've been following this program, follow my writing in places like Jacobin Magazine know, I've been writing about the attacks by the Republican Party here in the state of Texas on democracy. You know, from things like HB 2127, which is a law that's basically set up to prevent cities and localities from being able to pass basic legislation on things like ensuring that workers get water breaks, making sure that we can put in environmental protections if we want them, making sure that city government elections matter. You know, the part of the government that's closest to the people is the local government. And it's been something that the Republican Party here is very afraid of, because despite how much money they try to pump into these races, despite all of the endorsements from little freaks like Elon Musk and Barry Weiss, cities like Austin, Texas don't want to support reactionaries for elected office. And here in Austin, one of the people who has been a constant target of the right, of Elon Musk, of Barry Weiss, is our district attorney, Jose Garza. Jose Garza is now, has won two major elections here. He won the primary recently here in Austin, where, as I've noted time and time again, but I think it's worth looking at the rogues gallery supporting him, people like Elon Musk and Barry Weiss, who I have a feeling probably aren't registered to vote in the Travis County area, but, you know, made a big deal about, opposing Jose Garza, because of the anarchy that he's bringing into the city. Well, Jose Garza completely trounced his opponent. I mean, trounced, when overwhelmingly, and it's good to live in a city where a Willie Nelson endorsement is more important than an Elon Musk or a Barry Weiss one. But anyways, if, you know, I wish I was just bringing this up, to brag about past victories, because this victory is under threat. And, you know, as I was opened with, the Texas legislature has been trying to wage war on cities and localities in the state of Texas. And the most recent example of that, is this new attempt, to try to unseat, to remove Jose Garza. Again, somebody who won an election by a landslide, remove them from their position of district attorney under what's called the rogue prosecutor law. And that's an attempt, again, by the Republicans to try to take control of parts of the state that they don't control, which are the cities and where the vast majority of Texans live. And a judge here has accepted this petition. I'll just read the headline here. Travis County District Attorney faces removal attempt under Texas rogue prosecutor's law. A county resident accuses Jose Garza of indiscriminately pressing charges against law enforcement and refusing to prosecute certain crimes, which, by the way, that's what the way that the law is phrased. What people are mad about is, for example, in Austin, the public servant, our attorney, the district attorney here, doesn't want to waste our time and money throwing people in jail for low-level possession of marijuana. And that's something that's really pissed off the Texas, the Travis County GOP, the state-level GOP. They want to see more people behind bars. So they're trying to get this person removed. It's obvious this is a far right movement. This is the big money movement trying to weaken the success of a lot of progressive organizers on the local level here in Austin, just like there's been success in San Antonio, Dallas, Houston, El Paso, across the board. This is an attempt to try to weaken the ability of Texans to have a say in their communities, in their towns, and in their counties. And again, the people have spoken. I think that what matters more to me than anything is, what does the average voter in Travis County think? Who they want to represent them? Yeah. Or should it be some psychopaths who very much want to take away your ability to have a say over these kind of things? So, you know, we can get into the lawsuit, and maybe we will later. It's very much, and it's very clear that this is not some kind of genuine attempt. When they passed this law, everyone knew exactly who was being targeted, and it was Jose Garza, because they can't beat him at the ballot box. So they're trying to find other ways to get him out of power and to deny people their rights. So we'll be watching that a lot in this program. I know, Matt, you probably have something to add here, but it's just another clear example of why you can't kind of sit on your hands about these fights for freedom of speech, for democracy in this country, because there's a lot of forces out there that we've been talking about all night that want to deny those kind of basic facts of living in a democracy.
Yeah, well, a couple things. First, do you have your tweet that was very funny about people being afraid to come into Austin? I would reference our interview with Ella Karakatsanis about, you know, progressive prosecutors and some of the pitfalls that they may run into if they want to actually be a progressive prosecutor. And one of the things I said is that exact thing is they will come at you with a recall or something if you don't prosecute certain crimes. So this is very much just how these sorts of efforts are threatened. So yeah, I guess foreseen, and hopefully it works out. Also, just as you mentioned, Barry Weiss. Do you see what Barry Weiss called her university? Barry's Bovine University of Austin, Dallas. Which,
oh, that's nice. So yeah, they're having to call it that because they're basically hanging out in Harlan Crow's basement. He has like an office park or something in Dallas where they're housing the University of Austin in Dallas.
Austin, Dallas is so funny.
It's pretty special. I mean, forgive the cropping here, I noted this the other day. Was Jordan Peterson fans getting scared to buy tickets because it's in Austin? We'll see if the shift in the fake crime freak out from these folks. Will we start to see a shift in the fake crime freak out from these folks when it starts hurting their ticket sales? And here's Jordan Peterson, Austin, we who wrestle with God, coming to Moody Center on April 23rd, get tickets before they sell out. And I blurred these because I don't want you guys to harass these like ladies who are dumb, but whatever. They don't need to be attacked by y'all. I wish it wasn't in Austin. I don't feel safe there anymore. Too bad I didn't book the Cedar Park HEB Center. So true. Says, and there are more. I just didn't know how to crop it without getting a bunch of other stuff in there. But yeah.
Well, it's you know, bad.
It's what's so funny about it is like these little freaks, the Weisses, the Musks, all these, the Rogans, right? All made a big deal about moving to Austin, Texas, right? And now are all complaining about it 24/7 about like the crime. And let's get into this actually in just a second. But they're freaking out all the time about it because they want to wage war against the locals here, right? Because I guess I don't know what they thought. They were just going to hang out with a bunch of like Sam Elliott, like automatons, like when they moved here or something.
Westworld.
Live in Westworld. And yeah, it's like, no, people in Austin don't want, Austin, a very famous town. The most famous movie from the city is a movie called Slacker. They don't like when people get arrested for a low-level marijuana possession. But they can't say that, you know, they basically just want more kind of like quality of life policing and things like that. So they have to make it like Austin is one of the most dangerous cities in the world and I can't go anywhere. It does start to create a problem if you still want to come here and talk about Genesis or whatever the fuck Jordan Peterson's thing, which I don't know if you've seen yet, but that's a whole other conversation. But I did want to just highlight this before we lose this train of thought. This is from KVU. You know, again, not, you know, the center of woke misinformation. This is from KVU, our ABC affiliate. City of Austin crime rates dropped significantly in the first 3 months of 2024. New statistics reveal crime levels have gone down in the first quarter for the first time since 2020. You know, so just keep that in your back pocket the next time one of these little freaks, you know, starts saying that, you know, it's time for us to start cracking down on people to fight crime. And, you know, by the way, the most significant crime reduction here, or, you know, should be one of the ones, is homicides, which is, I think, a very
That's an important one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Homicides, like rapes, and kidnapping are all down in Austin. I'd like to see those at zero. And, you know, if we want to figure out a way to do that, great. But you can't sit here and say that some of the strategies that have been put into place recently haven't been having the intended effect of making this place a safer and better place for all of us to live. So to all of the assholes trying to ruin my home.
I walked across Austin to get this haircut, which I actually need to get touched up.
Well, you had to come back here to do it. yeah. Anyway, I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll have more on that. It's just the unreality of the way that these people talk about places like Austin or all these other cities is just truly, truly maddening. But I think Austin, there is something about it when all these guys are making a big deal about like moving there from California or from all those other places. And then they try to do the same thing here, regardless of what the facts on the ground are, you know, truly is something else.
Yeah.
Jordan Peterson's new thing, by the way, Matt, I don't know if you've seen it. He was writing a book that's highly influenced by Genesis, the book of Genesis. And I'm honestly looking forward to it. I watched some of the clips that he's put out. It's truly unhinged. And I do wonder, I think we were talking about this privately, you know, how like Jordan Peterson has been like replying to people. He replied to our friend Luke Savage with a haiku recently. And, yeah, you know, Jordan Peterson is just like a little bit too much of like a fancy pants academic for his own good. I wonder, I'm sure people are going to lie. He's going to make a lot of money on his book tour. I'm not going to bet against him. But I do wonder like what the reaction from some of these guys is going to be when, you know, they just sort of wanted to hear Jordan Peterson be based and attack trans people and scream about, you know, the woke, you know, mind virus and cleaning your room and stuff. And he's just fucking talking about, you know, how God created the earth in a week.
Look, I'm very much in the school of Dennis Prager when it comes to Genesis and his rational Bible, Genesis, God, creation, and destruction. Personally, so it's going to be tough to move me off of that mount.
Honestly, you know, that's actually a great point. It's like, I know you're, you know, a little tongue in cheek there, but like Jordan Peterson, dude, you're putting your foot in some like major theological.
I know, man. Like,
just getting all these guys really mad at you because you have,
these guys are talking about how it was like he got aroused by his grandma when he was six or something like that. And people can be like, Jordan, that's really, really gets canceled in the sectarian sort of splits.
I mean, it will be interesting because, you know, I think all of those people, including like the weird kind of like Catholic conservative thing that's going on, not like the like legit like Catholic conservatives, you know, people who are like in the church, but like the kind of hipster version of it. Yeah. Right. Watching those people sort of walk that line and get into trouble once they get a little bit too famous. Right. And then they start to actually have to deal with like other members of the congregation or other Catholics who might get really pissed at this like satanic bile coming out of Brooklyn.
They're going to have to start their own new, like
their own new, where they're going to have to leave the church.
Cause they're not going to have another reformation. Exactly. Let's start their own one that's safe for like them, like absolute interlopers.
Oh, Lord. Well, I think on that, Matt and I are going to go over to the postgame patreon.com/leftreckoning. We got a short little bit of the second part of that interview where we talk a little bit more in depth, some juicy stuff about Joe Biden, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. You won't want to miss it. Patreon.com/leftreckoning to get it. And then Matt and I are going to talk about Patrick Bet David. And, you know, as people who've been watching the post games know, Matt and I have been getting a lot of valuetainment recently, but we have to ask the question, could he lose the mantle? Could he get dethroned as the valuetainer in chief?
Is there a greater valuetainer?
He might get in trouble here. So you don't want to miss that. Patreon.com/leftreckoning. Thanks everybody for listening to this program. There are links below to get involved with the Uncommitted campaign. Please look into it. New Jersey and in Maryland, that fight is happening. It's really damn important. So yeah, come see us in the postgame, friends, and take care.
Peace.